From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, as President Obama praises Scotland for a full and energetic exercise of democracy, we ask what impact Scotland's push for independence has had in the United States.
Had Scotland voted to secede, it would have added wind to the sails of people who talk about secession here in the United States.
And we take a look at the career of legendary singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen, who turns 80 this weekend, just days before the Canadian artist releases his 13th studio album.
Cohen, the very definition of gallantry, says he is blessed with a certain amount of amnesia when asked to recall those days, but love was always his primary concern.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. Scotland's First Minister, Alex Salmond, is to step down from the role after voters rejected independence. The leader of the Scottish National Party has been at the forefront of the Yes campaign and one of the most prominent figures in Scottish politics in recent years. Scots voted 55% in favour of staying part of the United Kingdom. Mr. Salmond said his time as leader is nearly over, but that the campaign continues and the dream will never die. Ollie Barrett reports from the Scottish capital, Edinburgh.
This is a significant moment for Scottish politics. Alex Salmond, the man who has led the independence movement for so long, stepping aside now, having lost an independence referendum, and quite convincingly so. He has been one of the biggest beasts in Scottish politics for many years now, and Holyrood, the Scottish Parliament behind me, has been his prowling ground. As I say, the Yes campaign lost this referendum, and pretty significantly too, but their supporters have been out in some number again today to prove that their feelings will not go away, that their thoughts on independence will continue, and as will their activism.
France has begun airstrikes against Islamic State militants known as ISIS in Iraq. The office of President Francois Hollande says planes have carried out an attack on an ISIS depot in the northeast. France is the first to follow the U.S.'s lead to destroy ISIS bases in an effort to contain the spread of militants declaring a caliphate in the region, who've killed thousands of civilians, including Western hostages. Friday's airstrike comes a day after President Hollande said he agreed with the Iraqi authorities to give air support, but only to target ISIS in Iraq, not in Syria. Europe correspondent Sandra Gatman says there may be more to come.
Well, the attacks were carried out by French air forces deployed from their base in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. And we know they are poised and ready to carry out further attacks in the coming days, more airstrikes if needed. France has been deploying reconnaissance missions or air observation missions in the last several weeks to locate ISIS strongholds and stockpiles.
The Chinese e-commerce company Alibaba has opened almost 40% above its initial price on the New York Stock Exchange. The company's initial public offering, or IPO, could be the largest in history. Nick Harper reports from New York.
Public trading of Alibaba's shares started just before midday. They opened at $92.70 a share, a jump of 36% on the original $68 a share price they were priced at on Thursday. It'll be a busy first day of trading, but already two things are certain. After all the months of waiting, it's lived up to the hype, and it's made Alibaba and its founder, Jack Ma, a lot of money.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. Adele Abdul-Berry has pled guilty in a U.S. federal court to playing a role in the plotting of the 1998 bombings of the U.S. embassies in Tanzania and Kenya. The Egyptian is seen as a go-between, bringing messages to the plotters on the ground from Al-Qaeda's Osama bin Laden and his number two, Ayman al-Zawahiri. Priscilla Huff has more.
As part of a plea deal, Adele Abdul-Bari said he was guilty of three charges in the 1998 bombings of the American embassies in Nairobi, Kenya and Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, which killed 224 people. The charges include threatening to kill, injure, or destroy property by means of an explosive and conspiring to murder U.S. citizens abroad. His attorneys were given 1 week to explain to the judge why the plea deal should be accepted. The Egyptian man originally faced over 285 counts, but now the U.S. Attorney General for Manhattan says the charges were appropriate in regard to this defendant and the role he played in a much larger conspiracy.
Sierra Leone has begun a three-day lockdown in an effort to combat the rapid spread of the deadly Ebola virus. The goal of the curfew is to let health workers locate and quarantine new cases of Ebola before the infection spreads further. But some say suspicion of the health professionals limits their effectiveness. The government of Guinea has confirmed that 8 health and social workers involved in the battle against Ebola have been killed. 6 rural villagers have been arrested for the act. The community reportedly believes the foreign aid workers are spreading the disease. Gary Alfonso has this report.
Guinea officials say the 8-member team who tried to educate rural villagers about the deadly disease were killed in cold blood and their bodies thrown into a septic tank. Many rural communities are suspicious of official attempts to combat the disease and even blame foreigners for spreading the Ebola virus. The World Health Organization says 700 new cases of Ebola have emerged in 1 week, showing that the outbreak was accelerating.
And that's the latest from Feature Story News. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports. President Obama has praised Scotland for a full and energetic exercise of democracy after Scots voted to stay in the United Kingdom in a referendum on independence yesterday. In a statement, Mr. Obama said the US had no closer ally than the United Kingdom and looks forward to continuing a strong and special relationship. Following the result, British Prime Minister David Cameron says it was time to move on, adding Britain now has a chance to change for the better. Our correspondent in Edinburgh, Ollie Barrett.
The days leading up to the vote, of course, have been incredibly busy, incredibly energised in Edinburgh. The Yes campaign had been particularly visible, particularly vocal around this city. People driving around in cars, in vans, waving banners with flags, wearing badges. The No campaign, less visible, and some of them saying that they felt slightly under pressure from those that do favour independence and were less keen to wear their feelings on their sleeve. But nonetheless, it's been an incredibly busy, frenetic time in the build-up to this vote. The morning after, everyone's really gone home. Many people were out all night watching the results, and particularly those Yes campaigners who stayed up all night and obviously didn't get the result that they were hoping for. So Edinburgh, and I think other Scottish cities have been the same, has been really quiet. A lot of people have taken the day off work. A lot of people are reflecting on this news. But I think, of course, they would rather it that way around than people out on the streets causing trouble, arguing with each other, perhaps fighting. None of that really has been seen across Scotland. It's been a quiet day of reflection, really.
And, Ollie, will the two sides remain divided now following this vote?
That's possible, of course, although you do meet a lot of Scots who say that actually, if they'd had a third option on the ballot paper, which was not independence, but with many more powers coming towards them here in Scotland, that they would have voted for that. And actually, that is probably what is going to happen. London has had to promise more powers to Scotland in the run-up to this vote, with the polls getting closer and closer. And so there are people who lost out in this referendum who don't feel too aggrieved, who feel like the situation will still change to their benefit. So it's not necessarily as divided a country as you might believe from the polling and from the result of the referendum.
Do we know how fast Scotland will actually attain these new powers?
It could be within months, although a lot of this is very complicated and may face opposition in Westminster from some quarters. So that's going to be the challenge here, is for David Cameron's government and then whichever government follows it come May next year after the general election, how quickly they can extend these powers to Scotland, because having been promised these extra powers, the Scots are not going to take kindly to the idea of them being delayed in any way. But clearly we will be seeing new proposals for a timetable very soon indeed, and the Prime Minister is talking about getting draft legislation towards Parliament come early next year.
And where does this leave Prime Minister, UK Prime Minister David Cameron?
Well, it leaves him in his job, for a start. If he had lost this referendum, if the
country had broken up, I think he would have had to resign. Prime ministers are generally expected to keep their country together. It will, though, actually make it tougher for him to win a general election next time around than might otherwise have been the case. The Tories are not well supported here in Scotland, and so actually keeping the United Kingdom together is not electorally beneficial, maybe, for David Cameron.
Even if it wasn't the result that some people were hoping for, the turnout was pretty impressive for this vote.
Yeah, incredible levels of turnout, really. I have to say that as a journalist, I've never been anywhere and discovered people so energised, so engaged in the political process. It has seemed to be the only topic of conversation among Scots for some time now, and clearly, in that sense, the cliche that's being bandied around, but I think is accurate in this case, is that democracy has won in this process, and the Scots are very proud of that. And as I was saying earlier, they're also very proud of the fact that this is an issue on which people have such strong feelings, and yet what hasn't happened is that it hasn't descended into violence or serious violence at any point. So the Scots are proud, I think, of the way that the world has watched this democratic process unfold and has unfolded in a very civilised way, and that hopefully the Scots can remain united afterwards.
Ollie Barrett in Edinburgh. For more reaction to the referendum outcome across the wider United Kingdom, here's FSN's Iris Spitzer.
I accept that verdict of the people, and I call on all of Scotland to follow suit.
That's Alex Salmond, the leader of the Scottish independence movement, conceding defeat in Edinburgh. About 650 kilometres south, in the UK capital of London, there was relief.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm happy. They did the right thing.
For a lot of people, I know it's quite important for people in Scotland, but I do believe the United Kingdom is better together.
While the results are sure to be well received at Downing Street and across England, the question of what happens now is still very much an open one.
This has been an enormously divisive, very, very unpleasant, fractious period. It's turned households against themselves, against each other, against neighbours.
That's Douglas Murray from the Henry Jackson Society. He says the pressure now falls on leaders from across the political spectrum to look at the results of the referendum and govern accordingly.
Every effort must be made by all political parties, including the Scottish Nationalists, to make sure that that rift that the Nationalists have opened is healed very swiftly.
Few people can be as happy with the result as UK Prime Minister David Cameron, whose political future may have been saved by the Scots decision.
So now it is time for our United Kingdom to come together and to move forward.
Even though they ultimately decided to remain in the UK, the Scots managed to secure promises of more power and control at the local level.
Unionist parties made vows late in the campaign to devolve more powers to Scotland. Scotland will expect these to be honoured in rapid course.
The details of those vows have yet to be worked out and no doubt will be complex and controversial, but it will undoubtedly be less complicated than splitting the countries up would have been.
They have kept our country of four nations together.
The union between Scotland and England has stood now for over 300 years. With this historic result, the people of Scotland have determined that the kingdom will remain united. Iris Spitzer, London.
Not everyone was able to follow the results of the Scottish vote as it came through, so LBC Radio decided to do their bit to help by sending a reporter to greet Scottish holidaymakers with the referendum result as they stepped off the plane.
Well, what is the verdict? I've not missed it.
Do you not know?
No.
Which way did you vote?
I voted yes.
You want it to be yes?
Yes.
How does your country feel this morning as you step into it for the first time on this referendum day?
Well, you feel any different.
Do you not think?
Well, what is the verdict? Do you know?
I do.
What is it?
Shall I tell you?
What is?
It's no.
It's no. Thought that. I think I was about the only one of all my friends that was voting yes. Oh, well, not too bad. We'll just have to live with it, and that's it. It's a way of seeing family.
Well, I hope you had a lovely time.
I did.
Have you been keeping up with events back in your home country?
Yes, more or less, but I still don't know who's in.
Who did you vote for? Who would you like to have seen in?
No.
It's a no, madam.
Oh, is it? The pilot was a bit... The pilot in the plane had said, I don't know if I'm going to land in the United Kingdom or Scotland.
I wonder if you have landed this morning from somewhere particularly exotic, madam.
I have, Dubai.
Welcome home.
Thank you. It's been 8 months.
8 months?
Yes. And I've missed it, and I've missed the fresh air.
Well, welcome back to it. You've missed all the excitement.
I know, I've missed all the Commonwealth, all the voting.
And we're not independent.
Oh, my God.
You didn't know?
No, I've been flying all night. So I didn't know if I was going to get off the plane and shout freedom or...
Well, what are you going to shout? You've got to shout something.
Damn it.
Yeah, you could say that. You wanted to split.
Yeah, I wanted to divorce them.
Well, you've renewed your vows to the United Kingdom.
Oh, well. It's good to be home, though.
LBC's Tom Swarbrick. This is FSN Reports. Scottish referendum waves have long been crashing on the shores of the United States, with widespread public interest and dedicated media coverage throughout the process. And if a recent Reuters Ipsos poll is to be believed, events in the United Kingdom have strengthened support for US secession, with almost a quarter of Americans polled supporting the idea of their state splitting from the Union. To better understand this desire to divorce, we spoke to Professor of Governmental Affairs, Mordecai Lee.
I think it's clear that had Scotland voted to secede, it would have added wind to the sails of people who talk about secession here in the United States. Not just add wind to the sails, but I think it would have been like gale force winds. And in other words, it would have given it a qualitative increase and quantitative increase in the fierceness of people who want to talk about secession from the United States.
Which suggests then that there is a movement, a swell there that wants to be heard and taken seriously.
You know, this is bizarre to the point of weird. Yes, Americans tend to be ahistorical compared to some other countries, but to not remember what the Civil War was about is, to me, as a professor, astonishing. The Civil War was about if the U.S. Constitution included a right of secession, and the clear answer was no. And how can anybody ignore that awful war and the results of that war and think that somehow it is now a proper thing to talk about, it's a patriotic thing to talk about, it's a good thing to talk about? Mm-hmm. This is purely astonishing from the point of view of history and American constitutional law.
Many of the issues driving the independence campaign, the vote yes for independence for Scotland, range from currency to pensions to energy resources. In the United States, what's driving those people who are trying to sever ties with Washington?
I think a difference between Scotland and the United States is that here in the U.S., I believe the secession movement is very ideologically placed on the ideological spectrum. It's almost exclusively limited to people who are right of center, and it's almost exclusively limited to people who are radically right of center, who are very conservative, and who somehow think that it's kosher, it's okay to express their unhappiness with, say, President Obama or a Democratic Congress by seemingly wanting to secede.
You've referred to the push to secede in the United States. You've described it as a traitorous activity. Can you explain that?
I think that as a result of the Civil War, one can very clearly talk about what the U.S. Constitution stands for and what it means, and that any attempt to secede from the United States is unconstitutional. There is no right of secession. And so if somebody is seriously talking about secession in the United States, what they're talking about is overthrowing the constitutional framework. It's overthrowing the regime. It's a radical and revolutionary activity that I think is best compared to what some communists in the United States talked about in the 1940s, where some American communists believed in a violent revolution to overturn the U.S. Constitution and substitute it with a communist government. What we have to remember is that every public official in the United States who takes an oath of office, and if I recall correctly, any member of the armed forces when they take the oath of office, the oath includes preserving, protecting, and defending the Constitution of the United States. In other words, not the United States, but the Constitution of the United States. So anybody who wants to overturn the Constitution is indeed acting, it seems to me, at least technically, not just in a subversive way, but in a seditious way, that it's traitorous to claim that secession is permitted and is a good idea.
Professor of Governmental Affairs, Mordecai Lee. And finally, tonight, this Sunday, we'll see legendary singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen turn 80 years old, just 2 days before the Canadian artist releases his latest album, Popular Problems. Clearly showing little sign of hanging up his microphone, the man who gave us classics such as Alleluia and Suzanne will tour his 13th studio album. Arts editor for the Financial Times, Peter Aspden, looks at Cohen's career as he heads into his ninth decade.
Hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
A solemn rite of passage awaits Leonard Cohen this weekend. It's no less an important staging point for rock music in general. Never before has one of its most illustrious artists contemplated how to approach that tricky 80th birthday album. Cohen is in breakthrough territory. Expect further explorations of this hazardous hinterland from Bob Dylan, Paul McCartney and, God help us, the Rolling Stones in coming years. Popular Problems, generously reviewed by my colleague Ludovic Hunter-Tilney this week and released a day after his actual birthday on Monday, contains few surprises. This was never going to be Cohen's sparklingly produced dance album, although there is a jaunty feel to some of the new song's arrangements. What we expect is what we get, ruminations on mortality, from a man who sees its delineations ever more clearly. Self-investigation, as he himself defines his working method, without self-indulgence. The recent renaissance of Cohen's career, his late surge of form famously activated by financial troubles, is equally unsurprising. Cohen has ever been ahead of the times and ahead of his own time. He has always written and performed as if he were 80. World-weary in his 30s, resigned in his 40s, fending off midlife crisis with lugubrious asides in his 50s, and so on. Cohen's music is for all of us who want to grow old before we die. Few who saw him on his recent seemingly never-ending world tour will forget the impact of his spellbinding performances. He sang his hymnal Hallelujah as the sun set at Glastonbury in the summer of 2008, and as the financial world was hurtling towards its own darkness, like an Old Testament prophet unfurling his visions amid the pagan revelry. Many in the crowd will have first heard the song in Shrek. Cohen concedes that it may have been covered a little too freely. Young people get Leonard Cohen. Of course they do. It's not as if the popular culture of their time is saturated with sardonic reflections on life's more unsettling themes. My favourite birthday tribute to Cohen is a new song by a 30-year-old singer-songwriter, Lael Arad, called 1934, A Song for Leonard Cohen, which is released this week, having been released before its release on YouTube, which is the puzzling way of things these days. Arad is organising a birthday party for Cohen in, where else, Hoxton Square, inviting tributes for a recital and a concert at the strikingly fashionable Underbelly space on Monday evening. I asked her how she came across Cohen's music for the first time, and she said it was her father, the Israeli designer Ron Arad, who played it to her when she was a child to help her to sleep. He was a great finger picker, she said. She had an enviable lullaby repertoire, I replied. Her homage to Cohen is counterintuitively sprightly, featherlight and witty. She says people underappreciate his sense of humour. Most acolytes try to emulate the melancholy tones of the master, with dirge-like results. Arad's song plays on Cohen's erotic allure when he was in his prime, nestled in the cafes of the harbour of Hydra, tanned, grave and predatory. She is the willing victim of the song. "Just when I feel like I'd arrived, you'd say you'd have to leave," she sings. "I'd be left looking at myself on your record sleeve." Here's a snippet.
I'd be high on hormones, you'd be low on cash. We'd uncork the bottle, smoke into the stash. Just when I'd feel like I'd arrive, you'd say you have to leave. Be left looking at myself on your record sleeve.
Arad said she was as much inspired by a recent biography of Cohen, 2012's I'm Your Man by Sylvie Simmons, as by the man himself. The well-received book contains some remarkable nuggets from a life well-travelled. Cohen's little-known jam session with Jimi Hendrix, "Quick, Someone Tell Tom Stoppard." His self-financed performances in British mental hospitals in 1970. His dating of Brigitte Bardot in 1974, immediately followed by an acid-fueled tour of Israel. This is how we want our rock star poets to have behaved. It's the only way we'll actually listen to what they have to say when they grow old. Wisdom acquired not from a lifetime of frugality and self-denial, but from excess and experimentation. Cohen, the very definition of gallantry, says he is blessed with a certain amount of amnesia when asked to recall those days. But love was always his primary concern. That very dangerous area, as he puts it, where the possibilities for humiliation and failure are ample. Cohen says he was unflustered by the idea of death, but retained some concern over its disagreeable preliminaries. Who doesn't? But there are ways of easing the worry. You could try a red needle or two at Monday's Hoxton party, named after the cocktail Cohen invented in Needles, California in the 1970s, consisting of tequila, cranberry juice, lemon and ice. The drink and its drinking were prompted by the anxieties he said he faced as he approached his 41st birthday. Anxious at 40, but wondrous at 80. Happy birthday, old fella.
Arts editor for the Financial Times, Peter Aspden, on legendary singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen, who turns 80 this Sunday. And that's the Friday edition of FSN Reports. You can tell us what you think of the show. Email us, reports@featurestory.com. But for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington, alongside Rebecca Foster with The Bulletin. For everyone, with FSN everywhere. Have a great weekend. Goodbye.
And you want to travel with her, and you want to travel blind, and you know that she will trust you, for you've touched her perfect body with your mind. And Jesus was a sailor when he walked upon